I would like to read two passages from the Word of God. The first is in the book of Genesis, chapter 41, verse 39. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, Forasmuch as God hath showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. There shall be over my house, according unto my word, shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, See, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh took off his ring from his hand, and put it upon Joseph's hand, and arrayed him in vestures of fine linen, and put a chain of gold about his neck. And he made him ride in the second chariot which he had. And they cried before him, Bow the knee. And he made him ruler over all the land of Egypt. Now I want to read with that a passage in the book of Daniel, chapter 5. Daniel chapter 5 and verse 29. All of you know from listening to this in gospel meetings about the writing on the wall and so on. And verse 29. Then commanded Belshazzar, and they clothed Daniel with scarlet, and put a chain of gold about his neck, and made a proclamation concerning him, that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. That will do for reading. One of the greatest wonders that we have in our Christian experience is this, that we might imagine that we are in unique experiences, and that nobody else was ever in the fix or problems that we were confronted with. But what is interesting in the Bible is this, to see how even those living hundreds or over 1,000 years apart could come through very much similar experiences. Now, what I want to get into the minds of the younger element in our meeting this afternoon, if possible, is this. Never you imagine that you're tested and tempted in a way nobody else ever was. And never you try to excuse yourself and say, you know, I'm living in most difficult days, for I can't get through as easily as my older brethren and sisters were able to do. I want us to see from these two men that we've been reading about, one Joseph and the other Daniel. One at the very early days of the nation, it wasn't really a nation when he was on ago, the people of Israel, very early in the book of Genesis, I know he's at the end of the book, but in over 1,000 years between the two men. And here's a man, Daniel. And they're both almost a repeat one of the other. And I haven't a doubt but Daniel would have learned a good deal, for he did read his Bible, about how to act in the circumstances that were his. Now again, I want to say to the younger element, not we don't claim any of us to be very old, but the younger element, now we're not hard on you at all, but you learn from your older brethren and sisters, because they've been on the road before you, and there's hardly a problem that you have to face, but somebody has faced it before you were born, and somebody has faced it that maybe you would know, and that will help you in your present circumstances. Now, the first thing I want to say about the two men is this, that both of them were chosen vessels to bring God's name to heathen kings. Now, that's a big thing. Who would ever have thought that the shepherd boy, who was just doing what his daddy bid him, and was going about in his little bright coat, who would ever have thought the day would come when he would represent the God of heaven in the very presence of a monarch of the highest order? And who would have thought, if you'd have seen the captive, Daniel, in his humiliation down in Babylon, that God had destined him to be his representative in the midst of a hostile world. Now that, I judge, is very important. Dear believer, remember this. Wherever your circumstances are, you're God's representative there. You're meant to give an idea to the minds of those who know you of the God that you serve, and that you're to introduce to them the very God that has given you his salvation and his mercy. Then again, I think you will agree that possibly neither of these boys thought when they were very, very young that they would end up with so many experiences when their life was over. And Joseph was brought up quite humbly and quiet, and he never would have thought that he would end up looking into the face of a monarch on a big and important empire. And the same was true of Daniel. He was brought up a prince, of course, maybe better reared than Joseph was. But nonetheless, it's the unexpected in life that makes us realize the importance of knowing how to behave before God. Then again, they both were really cherished men. You know, some people very dear. They were really cherished. You see, they were not only chosen by God, but you know, without me saying anything very special about it, that it says that Jacob loved Joseph. Now, I know you'd say that that's because of Rachel. That may be. But he loved Joseph. There was something attractive about him that drew out the father's heart. He loved him. And you know, without me telling you, that it's quite often referred to Daniel throughout his book, Daniel Beloved. I doubt not, but maybe in that passage, it's beloved of God and favored by the Almighty. That may well be the meaning there. But still, both of them had that particular idea. Then again, I hope you will understand that they both had to face a test of the flesh. That's a big test. You see, it came differently to them both, but it was the same flesh. Whenever you think of Daniel as a boy, there was food. Now you know, I didn't tell you this, and you wouldn't need to know this, Newton Stewart, that when you're a young fella, you know you can eat nearly anything, and especially a bit of good stuff. A good meal when you're young. You know, old fellas like us, you know, we mightn't just be so fussy. We've had that day, and we're past that, and a wee bit of plainer diet would do us. But you know that a young chap was offered lovely meat just at the very time when it would be most enjoyable, he could have been attracted just as a young lad to take his meat. He says, no. I deny myself because I would be taking something that's offered to idols. And that way I would have fellowship with idols. Now, all of you have heard this preached time and again. I don't want to push it on Julie. But you can see there are times when the Christian has to say no. I wish we all learned that. Oh, you say, but what could I do? Sure, you know the circumstances. You can't blame me because that's where I'm placed, you know. I can't help it. I'm here, and what am I going to do? We just sort of try to make ourselves believe that circumstances changes the will of God. Now, that's not so. And, of course, I needn't go on to point out that the man Joseph was equally tested. Tested in that way that, again, youth would be tempted. And that was Potiphar's wife. Now, we're not going to spoil the meeting by saying a whole lot. But all of you know the story too well. And he could say no as well. Now, let us stop a minute. We've been learning, I hope, that our body is the temple of the Holy Ghost. And that our whole being is to be on the altar for God. I think if we gasped at all, we were all agreeing on that point. And in our Bible reading, don't use that body in a wrong way, dear child of God. Now don't. Listen carefully. Now, I don't want to be unkind, but remember, preserve its purity and its holiness in a dark world. Oh, you say, but you know there are temptations now that never were in vogue before. But you see, way back in Joseph's day, he listened to me. Way back then, the same temptation, the same tendency to evil was confronting people and will confront them as long as the world remains as it is. We need to think about that. That we needn't say, well, you know, conditions, the moral standards of the world are down and things are so different now. We can do as we like now in a sense and it's not as serious as it used to be. All those theories are out through the window, as it were. God has ever expected his people, wherever they be, to be holy and pleasing to the Lord in body and in soul. And then again, you notice that both of them were taken captives in very early life. You know, a young life just upset is an awful thing, isn't it? Had you seen those men carrying poor Joseph down to Egypt and putting him in as a slave into Potiphar's house, you'd have said, it's a pity that wee boy. It's a pity that lad. He likely was maybe, if he was out of his teens, it was the height of it. And there he is, strange language, strange customs. Everybody strange, not a friend, not a one to talk to. Mind you, loneliness is a terrible thing. Some of you don't know what I'm talking about. You've never known anything about loneliness. But loneliness, I remember the late Mr. Bunting telling us on one occasion that when he was in Canada and on the prairies, he was so lonely that he just longed to have heard even the bark of a dog or even to have seen a Christian of any sort. It became so depressing. Now here's a young man, now he's in a crowd of course, but he's lonely in the sense that there's nobody there that knows God, and he's standing alone. And you know the same was true, not to the same extent, but Daniel, in some way or other, must have felt it very strange down amongst the captives, down amongst the very early captives now. Don't forget that. He was carried away ahead of quite a number of the nation that followed on. And he was there having to live for God with nobody hardly beside him. I know that there were the other youths, we're not despising them, and they may have been with him for a time, but there were times when Daniel had to stand alone and he had to know God's way of acting and God's way for him. May the Lord help us, brethren, to know what it is to be able to stand alone even when no one is looking at us that we know of or that knows us personally. Now, I don't need to tell you that both men were facing not just ordinary kings now, but kings who looked upon themselves as gods. Because the king of Egypt would definitely have in his mind that he was just as much as God, whatever he said was law. And you know, Nebuchadnezzar, whom he would he slew and whom he would he kept alive, I'm not exaggerating, he just acted more or less like God. It's not this great Babylon that I have built. And both of them were the head of empires. Now, there was no empire I would judge as large as Egypt when Joseph was on earth. It was likely the supreme land of the world. It was, we might say, top-notcher as far as nations were concerned. And everyone knows that from the times of the Gentiles started with Nebuchadnezzar, that there was no other king who was so powerful as he was. And yet you will notice this, that both men had to deal with dreams. Now, they both dreamt themselves. We're told that Joseph had a dream, and he interpreted his own dream. And then you'll notice that Daniel had his dream in chapter 7, and he interpreted his own dream, or at least he understood his dream, and it gave him grave concern and great concern. That is to say, now listen carefully, God had ways of working in people's minds that never saw the page of a Bible. Are you thinking about that? Oh, I know we all do our best to distribute the Word of God. We think it's great. But we mustn't limit God to the Bible, because he has wrought before ever man saw the page of a Bible. The men that were dealt with in Egypt, the king of Egypt, he was given a dream. And that very dream was God's message to him. And you know that the great king of Babylon, he too was given a dream. And that was God's message to him. Now, will you please, dear saints of God, that'll settle your mind many a time. You look at a man, you say, there's a man I'll never see in a gospel meeting. I'll never get a word of gospel into his ear. You may think he's away outside the realm of God's dealings altogether. We have a God in heaven who can speak to any of his creatures, be they ever so proud and ever so important in the eyes of their fellows. They're not too big. They're not too great for God not to steal into their minds. And you will equally notice that the two men, the two kings dreaming, was the door that opened to bring God's man into their presence. Now, can you follow that? One of the things we should be thankful for, I don't know whether I can get this over to you or not, for I'm not good at getting things over, but I'll do my best, is that we should realize this, that when I'm speaking to a man, maybe introducing him to the gospel, I must keep in my mind, now God may have been dealing with that man before I was speaking to him. And God might even use me to explain to him what he has confused about in his mind. And that God will have him prepared for the light that I am going to bring to him. That is, God prepared Joseph, prepared the Pharaoh for Joseph's visit, and made room for him. And God prepared Nebuchadnezzar for Daniel's visit. to him. Now we're clear on that. Because that's important. You see, I know that I'm maybe not as doing as much as I used to do or would like to do of personal work. I really love going around doors, and I really love to talk to people privately. I get educated when I'm talking to the people. You don't know that, but that's I get educated. I see what they think, and I can listen to them, and they can listen to me. And now that's one of the things to get to know, that your preaching's not all on the platform. Wasn't the late Mr. John Knox McEwen, I don't take too much time at this, but about late Mr. John Knox McEwen, he says, you know, some preachers keep all their preaching for the platform. He says, I take mine to the park. I meet a lady and she's wheeling a pram and she's a little baby in it. And I look at the little baby. Is that your little child? Oh, yes, it is. Now, that's a lovely little child. That's a lovely little child. If that child were to die, where would it be? Oh, would it be in heaven, Mr. McEwen? Well, she wouldn't know his name, of course. It'd be in heaven, sir. If you died, where would you be? Now, you see, he was using just ordinary things to get people to think. And you know, he'd walk up to a lot of young fellas standing at a corner. You don't do that now, but he'd come to a lot of boys and say, I say, take a look at me. I'm a happy looking old man. Hi, don't you see? Would you like to know the secret? That opened the door for him to get the gospel over to those people. You see, God opening doors, brethren and sisters, are you awake to it? In your office, in your shop, in your neighborhood. God bringing people into circumstances where they listen to you, and where they'll be glad of your company, and where they'll want to hear from you, and when they'll feel that you have an interpretation for their difficulties that they would otherwise not have solved by their own thinking. You see, God brought those kings to realize that there was a man that they needed, that they never valued until they had the dreams that had to be interpreted. And secondly, I want you to notice this. That it fell a heavy lot of Joseph to tell Pharaoh about 7 years of famine. Now that was tearing, we might say, him down from his pedestal. I needn't tell you folk, I'm sure you know better than I do, that Egypt was the great country for providing food. You know right well that when Jacob was thinking of food he sent down to Egypt, of course he had heard about it, but he would never have heard about it, only it was a famous place for food. It's still, I suppose, a fertile, there's not too big an area in Egypt fertile, but what is cultivated is a fertile land. Now, that was food. And he was taking them down and saying, look, see, man, in a 7 year famine. Now, you all know that year after year after year, that a famine gets worse and worse as it proceeds. Thus, he was as well taking them down from his pedestal, and he was leaving them low and flat. And then the other man, Daniel, he goes into the presence of Nebuchadnezzar, and he brings him down, and he leaves him flat, because he says, yes, you'll be going about, and just as those 7 years of famine, you'll have 7 years, and you'll not be able to understand, and he'll be just living like a beast. Now, I hope you're following that. Just to look into a monarch that feels he's as high up as God, and that God was going to bring him down to humility until he'd just be like a beast. He's scraping at the roots and eating the old roots and scraping at things. That sort of stuff. That sort of humiliation. Oh, his big robes thrown away. His jewelry dropped off him. And all the grandeur of his palaces all forsaken. And he's just living out like an animal. God teaching Nebuchadnezzar and bringing him down. God teaching Pharaoh and bringing him down. Now, well, you see how God was working on these things. And then you notice that the two men, when they had interpreted dreams, and of course you all know that I was thinking particularly of the interpretation of the writing on the walls. It's the same thing. Anybody knows that banquet was upset by the writing on the wall. And then the writing was there. And I want us now to notice that both men left in confusion those that the king depended on to give interpretation. You see, the magicians couldn't explain to Pharaoh the answer to his dream. No, they couldn't. God left that was for Joseph to do. And the Chaldeans, because that word's used in a double sense. It's not only a nation, but it's a special class of people in the nation. I haven't taken time to explain that. But the interpreters in Babylon couldn't explain the words on the wall. They couldn't read the writing. They could read the letters, but they couldn't explain it. So that meant to say that God was not only humiliating the kings, and those Belshazzar in the second passage, but he was also showing that he can give light where there's darkness and where men are defeated. We need to remember that. We need to remember that it's God's great design to show man his littleness, how little he can do, how helpless he is in the very big things that he would need the help to do. He's left flat. He can do nothing. Do nothing. They were beaten. And you know, men don't like to think that they'll be beaten, especially these who have reputations for being great scholars in these matters. Then again, you will notice that when Joseph had interpreted the dream, Pharaoh thought, it were great, that's a great man. I need that man in my kingdom. I need that man to be second in the kingdom. Only in the throne will he be greater than me. I'll give him the second chariot and I'll do. And you notice what he did. He gave him a nice set of suit clothes. Put on a nice garment on him. And then he put a chain of gold around his neck. He decorated him. And he says, now that's the mark, that's the symbol, that everybody who meets him will know that he's a distinctive person because he has gotten these nice things put upon him. And is it almost amazing, is it not, that when Belshazzar, as I've just read, interpreted the dream, or the words on the wall, isn't it very amazing to see that he also was given a change of clothing, and he also was given a chain round his neck. That is, both kings were made to honour those who had honoured God. I hope you're thinking that out in your mind. That is to say, they were given honours in the presence of the man who themselves were humiliated. And at the same time, God was seeing to it that his people were honoured by these heathen kings. Now you say, what does all that to do with what you're at? Well, I want us to get a hold of something. You see, you must admit that without being crooked or awkward, both men belong to the nation of Israel. I wonder how many times the world will need to live, or how long they'll have to live, before they know that God's great program in the world is to give Israel its rightful place. Now don't forget that. Now we may talk about peace treaties, and we may talk about this thing and that thing, but I want to tell you something. The world will never be right until Israel gets restored. And the world will never be right until Israel is the supreme nation on the earth. Now that's a national thing, that's an earthly thing. It's not for you or me, or what we commonly call the believers in general. It's not for us to make the world right. But God will bring back his people to himself. I'm not saying these two men needed to be brought. But what is clearly manifested is this, that heathen kings that would have looked upon these two as of no importance whatever are being taught by God to honour them and to give them honours not only in their own esteem but in the sight of others who beheld them. Just imagine riding about in a chariot, the boy that was carried on the beast down to Egypt. Now don't forget that. I mean, you were all said and done, dear saints of God. I hope we're not too big in our thinking, but I hope we're all agreed that whatever humiliations we have them now. We talk about downs and ups, and more downs than ups, but one great thing is this, that when all's over, we'll have one up, and there'll be no down. Up and no down. Mind you, it'll be a great thing to share God's kingdom. Hope you appreciate that. I hope you think that now, well, I have no importance, there's nobody takes any heed to me. I don't count. The world can carry on without me. I hardly know I'm alive. You might think all those things, but I want to tell you there's one at God's right hand, and he puts your high value upon you. He has put you into his kingdom, and he's going to allow you to share his glory. And you're going to be exalted. Now, what I do want us to remember, that here are two men that God saw to it, were exalted and extolled and made very high. I'm not despising that now. I'm not saying anything in out of the place. They were done that. But if they were, they were men who were true to God when the days of testing were upon them. Now, as you go through this world, young believer, you'll have many a test. I don't think there's a Christian in the hall today would tell you that he could foresee his future and that he knew exactly how the path would go. Certainly, when I was a boy, if you'd have told me there'd be a day when you'd be speaking at a conference, I'd have smiled at you and said, your head not too well. I would never have dreamt of it. Praise God, I hadn't even such thoughts in my head. Never even dreamt of it. And you know right well that many of us feel that we couldn't foresee what was ahead of us. But remember, there's a wise God behind it all. Now, if what I want us to get over in our mind, here are two men. They faithfully represented God where they were. Now, they couldn't change their circumstances. Now, they couldn't bring their circumstances to what they wanted. But there's one thing they could do. And that's one thing that they appreciate. They could do what's right in their then difficult conditions. And if we can do what's right in the midst of difficulties in our own day, and they won't get anything less, then we can count upon God to give us that honor in a coming day. Not in this world, perhaps, but less. We want nothing in this world, as we're reminded, we're not to be conformed to it. And wasn't it well that these men kept in touch with God? For that was the secret. And that was what enabled them to interpret. And that's what enabled them to act the way they did. And that's enabled them. But I do want also to stress. Now, they're living far apart, aren't they now? As far as time is concerned. But mind you, they repeated each other's story very closely, didn't they now? I've only touched some of the points because I wouldn't. You're told about the time here, and I know it's important. What about us, friend? Your little story has soon been done. So will mine. Have you filled the niche now? Now listen, dear young believer. Watch this. Will you fill the niche that God has fitted you for? Well, you see, there's nothing important about it. Now, we're not talking about that. God put you there. Can you fit in there and fill it out for God's glory? Remember, you'll see his face and you'll give an account of it. And as a steward, you're meant to represent God in the world wherever you are, whatever district you're in, and whatever difficulties you may have to contend with. God knows them all, and doing what's right and keeping right with him will be rewarded in a coming day.